Now we come to chapter 2, and we see him now following another course to find satisfaction in life. And this is the route that a great many are taking today, seeking satisfaction and pleasure. And in the next 11 verses here in chapter 2, why he goes into that. Listen to him. He says, I said in mine heart, go to now, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this is also vanity. Now, this man, Solomon, I think he probably tried everything that is known today in the way of pleasure. Now, we are sex-crazed and a sex-mad people. And what do we have to show for it? Well, we have certainly low morals, and we have venereal disease that's in epidemic stage today. Now, Solomon was rather an expert in this area of sex. And today the church has gone in this direction, and I suppose most pastors have a sermon on sex. Some of them have a whole series. And there are many today that feel like that we should have a course in the church to teach our young people about sex. May I say, I'm very much of a square. I think that's a big and tragic mistake. That's my idea. This generation is getting sex right up to here, and I'm now putting my hand up to my ears. We are getting all of it that I think we need. But in spite of all of that, may I say to you, I submit to you that Solomon was the expert in this area. He had 1,000 wives. Now, not all of them were wives. A great many of them were what would be called concubines. But they were all available to him. And a man that's got 1,000 of those around is some sort of an expert, my friend. And Solomon tried that field. He went in for drinking. He went in for entertainment. He had the outstanding nightclub of the country in his day. He could have put on a performance that would make Las Vegas look like it was Penny Ante and that it was a sideshow in a small circus. But this is the thing this man tried. Pleasure. Now, will you listen to him in his experience? He said, I said in my heart, go to now. I'll prove thee with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. And the word vanity, as we've said before, means empty. And he said, I said of laughter, it's mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? He said, I have had a fool at court that entertained me, told me the latest joke. And many of them, I suppose, that were questionable. And he said that I found out that this was a great waste of time. He said, I sought mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven, that is, under the sun, all the days of their life. Now, this is a man probing at life, making experiments apart from God. Now he said here that I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. These were all hobbies with Solomon, of course. You can go to that land today. You can see his stables, ruins of them in several places, right in Jerusalem. There are the ruins and up at Megiddo. The thing that they will show you, the ruins of the troughs there, apparently where the horses ate. Solomon had stables all over that land. And he was forbidden, that is, the Mosaic law forbade the king to do that. Then he said, I made me pools of water. And he had a swimming pool. To water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. He had irrigation. I got me servants and maidens. I had servants born in my house. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. He had him a ranch out at the edge of town where he raised this. Somebody says, how could he afford all of this? Well, Solomon cornered the gold in his day. He had plenty of spending money, and he went in for entertainment. And he built him all of the comforts of life. They know today that they brought down from Mount Hermon snow so that he could have cold drinks in summertime. And now Solomon, I think, tried everything that a man today could try for pleasure. I don't think there could be any exception to this whatsoever. And it just didn't seem to work out. Listen to him. I gathered me also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings and of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers. He brought in the best nightclub acts from Las Vegas. They didn't really satisfy. And the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. He said, I had all kinds of music, the sweet music, the rock music. I had it all, but didn't satisfy. So I was great, and I increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Ms. McGee and I are out a great deal in conferences, and one of the things we like to do some evenings to get away from everyone after a service, we just walk through a shopping area. And I have said to her, would you like some time to be able to buy everything that you see and want? She said she wondered how it would feel to do that. Well, Solomon did that. Anything that his little heart wanted, why, he bought. And as he looked out upon this world, there's nothing that it withheld from him. Now the question is, would this bring satisfaction? Would it bring joy to his heart? Imagine being in a unique position like that. You would think that a man like that would be happy. Well, I don't know why, but they're not. Here in Southern California, we have more suicides, I'm told, than the average is in the country. And you would think that it would probably be the bums on Skid Row that would be the ones that commit suicide. Life certainly doesn't seem to be worth much to them. But, friends, it's not those people that are committing suicide. It's the rich, the famous, and the Hollywood stars, the folk that seem to have made it. They are the ones that commit suicide. Why? Because they've come to the same conclusion that Solomon did. When he tried everything in the way of pleasure, in verse 11 he says, then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Just think, this is the conclusion Solomon came to, and yet a great many people have to make the same experiment, only not near to the extent Solomon did, but they always come out at the same end of the horn. They come out and say, it was all vanity, empty, just empty nothing, just a big bunch of nothing. That's all that life proved to be. Now in verse 12, through the remainder of this chapter, he moves into an area, and I do wish I had a better word for it, but I don't, and I call it materialism. We would say today that it's living for the now. This is the now generation. Now. And it's all right because the Bible presents now generation. Now is the accepted time. Now is the day of salvation. And so I think I belong to that now generation. But now this man, he tries out here materialism, living for the here and now, living for self, selfishness. All of these words describe a facet of this type of living, and there are many like this. Now listen to him. Verse 12, Ecclesiastes 2. And I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. And what can the man do that cometh after the king, even that which hath been already done? In other words, no one could live it up more than Solomon did. And he said they'd have to repeat what he did, and they'd find it very monotonous. Verse 13, then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness. In other words, it's better to be wise than to be foolish. It's better to be a wise man than it is to be a fool. It's better to be an educated man than to be an ignorant man. Most people would accept that, I'm sure. And Solomon is saying that. But notice the conclusion that he comes to. While the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. I used to hear it when I was in school. I've had my parents use it with me. I've had school teacher. Use your mind. Use your head. Use your eyes. And that's what Solomon is saying here. A wise man uses his eyes, uses his head. The fool walketh in darkness. And I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. But it doesn't make any difference how smart you are. You don't really get too far away from the fool, because both going to come out at the same place, and they're going to carry your feet forward out and bury you in the ground or put you somewhere. You both going to end up the same way. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise? You think a smart fellow would find another way out. Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. Isn't it interesting that man, with all he knows today, and with all of the tremendous inventions that have come to pass, and even scientific advances have been made in the realm of medicine, yet man today cannot extend human life very long. They say, my, the average life is up now another 10 years. 10 years? You want to put 10 years down by 1,000, see how much you got? You want to put 10 years down by eternity and see what you have? 10 years. Well, you don't even have a minute on the clock of eternity. You don't have a second on that clock, my friend. The thing is that man really hasn't done very much for himself here on this earth. Not at all. Now, will you notice verse 16? For there's no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever, seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man? As the fool. Same way. They die just the same way. You can't learn anything. I don't care how high your IQ is. I don't care how many PhD degrees you have, or THD, or any kind of a D degree. Why, it doesn't make any difference. My friend, you don't know anything that's going to really help you out when the time comes to die, because you're going to go right out that door. And there's nothing in the world that'll keep you from it. Now, listen to this man Solomon. Therefore, he says, I hated life, because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me, for all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now, as we've said before, vanity here means that which is empty, meaningless, purposeless. He said, granted that I do all of this, what have you done? Take Thomas A. Edison. Thomas A. Edison, oh, how he worked in the laboratory, and how many things he developed, especially electric light bulb, the Victrola, all of these recording instruments, they go back to Thomas A. Edison, a man that was a genius. But you know, he died just like anybody else. He never found out anything. Never really knew anything. And what good did it do him, after all? This man says, I hated life. My life became an awful bore. And that's what it is for a great many people today. Because the work that's wrought under the sun, he says, it's grievous unto me. It became a great ordeal. We think of Thomas A. Edison again in the laboratory working day and night. That's not accurate. He couldn't sleep. He had insomnia of the worst kind. He had a little bed in his laboratory. You can see it down in Fort Myers, Florida. And if you're ever down there, you ought to go by there and take that trip. It's very much worthwhile of going through the Edison home and the laboratory that he had there. And this man would just work a few hours at a time, day and night, purposeless, really. All the things he tried to do that never did work out. Actually, you don't get the impression that there was a great thrill going on in his life. I take it that Thomas A. Edison found life very boring. I think you get that impression down there. Now listen to Solomon here in verse 18. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. I've got to go off and leave all of this someday. Have you ever stopped to think about that? What good's it going to do you? And a great many people today wonder about leaving what they have. Worked all their lives to accumulate a little and then go off and maybe leave it to some godless relative, or leave it to some godless son or daughter. And a great many say, well, I'm going to leave it to a Christian organization. Have you ever stopped to think how many of those Christian organizations have become apostate and they've departed from teaching the Word of God? Did you know that Mr. Harvard, who founded Harvard University, was a fundamentalist just as much as you are, and he left his money to propagate the fundamental faith? My friend, you wouldn't find fundamental faith in 10 yards of Harvard today. The interesting thing is it's departed from the faith. And what he left came to naught. In fact, it's used for the very opposite. And a great many people today leave money to so-called fundamental organizations. How do you know that it will be carried on? And may I put in a plug, if you don't mind? We face that problem. And the point was, I didn't want to work hard and build up a radio program, then go off and turn it over to some fellow that would come along and say, well, you know, McGee was very much behind, and we want to bring the program up to date, and we want to make it relevant to the time, and then start contradicting the things that I've taught. And we went back and have put a clause in the Constitution that this program operates under, so that this program has to use my tapes long after I'm gone. And as long as there's money to carry on the program, you'll have to listen to my voice. But you're going to be sure of one thing. You're going to hear the Word of God taught best I know how to teach it. And that's the thing I was concerned about. And so today, you can be sure of one place. You can leave your money, and if you're in agreement with what we preach and teach, that's going to continue. It has to continue. This place would go out of business, but it has to be used for this and for nothing else. May I say to you today, friends, this is a problem that a great many people face, and Solomon faced that. And then read his story, that son of his that divided the kingdom. It was divided under him. He was responsible for it, and how tragic it was. Now, will you notice, he goes on to say, he says in verse 19, who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool? That is, a godly man or a godless man that'll take what you have made. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I've labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This is also vanity. Solomon said to work for it and then turn it over to someone that's a fool. He says it's a waste of time. Verse 20, therefore I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. Anything you do under the sun, you see, this is the wisdom of the man under the sun. He's apart from God. This is not the man seated in the heavenlies in Christ Jesus. This is under the sun, away from God. And pessimism is the outcome, always is. And it has to be here. And that's what it is. Verse 23, for all his days are sorrows and his travail grief, yea, his heart taketh not rest in the night. This is vanity. And Solomon found out something else. Didn't do you any good to worry about it, because there's nothing you can do about it, my friend. couldn't say them. I think you can today. Now, verse 24. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat, or who else can hasten hereunto more than I? For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. If you are just living today, just for self, even if you are God's man, and if you're a sinner, living for self, it'll come to naught. It will finally be bitterness in your heart, and it'll be bitterness in your mouth even, and it'll be nothing in the world, but you'll hold just bitter, dead leaves in your hand. That'll be life for you.